Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement. My name is Zachary Mallory, and I am the founder of the Rise Above Justice Movement, as well as the host of the Rise Above Justice Movement, the podcast. Today, I am joined by one of my absolute favorite people, Ricky Longoria. But before I bring him in, I do want to give a very brief viewer discretion as advised due to the nature of the topics that we will be discussing during this podcast episode. Ricky, welcome to the Rise of Justice Movement podcast. I am so excited for you to join me today and talk about gun violence prevention, the intersectionality of marginalized communities, Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and everything in between. Ricky, please introduce yourself and take it away, my friend.
Hi, Zach. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. My name is Ricky Longoria. I use he, him pronouns. I've been a lifetime advocate since the fourth grade, got very involved very young in politics. And when I was in, elementary, I learned about Sandy Hook. And I remember being afraid to go to school. And I told my parents about it. And they were like, well, it only happens in big cities. You don't have to worry about it. And from there, it just became a constant cycle of seeing a shooting. And I was still very young at the time. And I remember also seeing Aurora in Colorado. And at that time, I was like, I don't want to go to the movies anymore. I don't want to get killed. Again, the same speech. It's not going to happen here. It only happens in big cities. And then once I got to high school, I noticed that this was a pattern. This is happening only in America because Parkland happened. I remember I got that notification sitting in my dual enrollment class as a junior in high school. And I jumped out of my desk and I said, oh my God, there's a mass shooting in Florida right now. And everyone was just so like immune to it, didn't bother them, it didn't faze them. And same thing with happened with Santa Fe here in Texas. I was in my dual enrollment class, my English class, and I said, oh my God, there's a shooting here in Texas in Santa Fe. And again, no one was fazed by it. And that's when I really got involved with March for Our Lives and really got involved with gun violence prevention and was really a multi-issue organizer. And then Uvalde happened in 2022, where I really, really took an interest and a lot of work in it because it hit very close to home. I live 2 hours away from Uvalde. The children that were impacted and the victims that were impacted were children who looked like me. They had familiar last names, and they were in a small rural community just like mine. And I figured, it not only happens in big cities, if it can happen in Uvalde, it can happen anywhere across the country, no matter who or where you're at. So I'm just eternally grateful for the work that I've done, the work that you do, Zach, at Rise Above Justice Movement, and just so grateful that you've given me an opportunity to talk about this. It's one of my passions and love always bringing awareness. And I truly am hoping for a day where we don't have to talk about it anymore.
Ricky, thank you so much for being candid and talking about this topic because this is not an easy topic to talk about. And as a domestic gun violence survivor myself, I bring an intersectional approach, focusing on domestic violence, but also the intersectionality of being LGBTQ myself, and then also domestic violence and gun violence, and bringing a focus and awareness to these topics. And one of the mass shootings across the United States that really hit me the hardest was back in 2016, June 12th of 2016, where 29-year-old Omar Mateen shot and killed 49 people and wounded 53 more in the mass shooting at Pulse nightclub. I remember waking up that next morning and my mom had this look on her face and she told me, she said, "Have you looked at your phone yet?" And I said, "No, why?" And she said, "You might want to do it. There was a mass shooting in Orlando. And most of the victims were Latino." And because it was Latino night at Pulse nightclub. And I remember thinking to myself, that could have been me. Those times of going to, different gay bars, going to drag shows with my mom, it can literally happen anywhere, anytime, any place. The safe spaces are not the safest, or what is meant to be as a safe space. Later that year, I traveled to Denver, Colorado, and this was so this you know Pulse took place in June. I went to Denver, Colorado in October of 2016 to accept the Spirit of Matthew Award from the Matthew Shepard Foundation, and there I met an incredible human being who was working for the foundation at that time. Her name is Sarah Grossman. And we connected after the event, and we stood down in the lobby and talked for several hours. And she introduced herself by saying, "I really appreciate you and all the work that you were doing to bring awareness to hate crimes across the United States." Because at that time, I was very heavily involved in like LGBTQ advocacy. I still am, and I bring that intersectional approach. However, I focus on a lot more and bring those intersectionality or intersecting identities to these topics, because these topics are very intersectional, and that is something that is highly overlooked at certain times. She also shared with me that her best friend, Drew Lineman, was shot and killed in the Pulse nightclub shooting. I remember her looking at me with the blankest expression, and she just started crying. I remember the conversation like it was yesterday. That was also the day that I met Sean Hayes, aka Just Jack, from Will and Grace. And I remember looking at my phone whenever I got up to the hotel room, and he sent me an email, and he thanked me for speaking. He said, "Please keep in touch, please keep in contact." And his husband added me on Facebook, and I see updates all the time. But thinking about being LGBTQ yourself, Ricky, what was your reaction to the Pulse nightclub shooting?
It was, I was obviously still very young at the time, and I never, was able to fully grasp until I was older that what happened was a hate crime. And I remember being on Facebook and seeing that it was obviously a gay club, and obviously I still wasn't able to grasp what really happened. And then I saw a lot of my friends and family start putting the solidarity filter on their profile with the rainbow flag. And it said, "We are Orlando." And seeing that, really made me feel seen, validated, because I wasn't out at the time yet. And it also made me feel afraid to come out because, I mean, if gay people can be killed in a split second, what's that stopping from me from being killed for being who I am? So when I heard about it, I was very, very, very shocked. I was sad, and the entire world kind of just went silent and dark, which is kind of weird for America. I didn't really see a lot of homophobia from anyone. I just saw a lot of peace and unity from politicians and from people who I looked up to. So that was really, really good to see. And now that we flash forward to today, the monument is still there, and we saw what Florida did with the crosswalk, with the, cleaning of the rainbow. And it's just so sad. We've gone so backwards as a country that it is unsafe to be anyone, no matter who you are. It's unsafe. And they're trying to whitewash this country. They're trying to eradicate people who are different from them, eradicate people who are gay, lesbian, trans. And we're seeing it every day, not only in Florida, we're seeing it across the country. The amount of attacks that we're seeing on trans people and trans kids is so sickening to me. I have a really good friend. I won't mention their name, for privacy reasons, but you know who I'm talking about. And she had to flee the state of Texas because her daughter is a trans youth, and her daughter is not safe in school because Governor Abbott wants to attack them and what restroom they use. Governor Abbott wants to remove them from sports to be who they are. And it's not even about the fact of it being a quote unquote fairness issue. It's just a discriminatory issue is what it is. And it's so sad and sickening. But what motivates me to keep on going is the fact that the people in Florida, Red Florida, showed up and continued to pay, I mean, chalk over the sidewalk. They continued to have the rainbow flag there, no matter Governor DeSantis trying to wash it away. They still showed up and they did it. And people like you are bringing attention to it through the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast, the Rise Above Justice Movement Instagram. And it's what we need right now at this point in time. You say it over and over again. We're going to continue being who we are. We're going to continue to exist. And we're not going to go anywhere. We're not going to give in. We're not going to cave in. Because at the end of the day, you and I and our followers are the epitome of freedom. We just want the freedom to be who we are, the freedom to love who we love in peace and harmony. That's all we're asking for.
Absolutely. And you mentioned about the group going down to Orlando and repainting and, kind of like talking over the removal of the Rainbow Crosswalk, and who I mentioned earlier is one of those people that has been a part of that group, Sarah Grossman. She is also a big part of the Drew Project, which focuses a lot on uplifting like LGBTQ students, especially like the GSAs, you know, the Gender and Sexuality Alliances. And she does some incredible work. And she also owns like her own like LGBTQ like marketing firm, and she does like all kinds of things. But she will be on the podcast at a later time, and I'm deeply excited to sit down and talk with her because I think you're going to resonate a lot with what she says, and I resonate a lot, and I know a lot of our followers also will as well. And I want to jump really quickly and talk about the Uvalde shooting down there in Texas. This one also kind of hit me like a rock. And this is, you know, this one is really hard to talk about. And for those who are unaware, the Uvalde school shooting was a mass shooting on May 24th, 2022, at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, where 18-year-old Salvador Ramos, a former student at the school, fatally shot 19 students and two teachers while injuring 17 others. Ramos was killed 74 minutes after entering the classroom by law enforcement officers. Uvalde became the third deadliest shooting at an American school after the Virginia Tech school shooting in 2007 and the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting in 2012, and the deadliest school shooting in Texas. He remained in the classrooms for 1 hour and 14 minutes before members of the United States Border Patrol Tactical Unit breached the classroom and fatally shot him. I'm gonna let that stick just for a second.
Yeah, and while they're sitting with that, I want them to really internalize the 77 minutes that these children and teachers had to endure. Just think about that.
77 minutes. I can't even fathom what went through the survivors' minds at that time, and what was going through the teachers' minds. And Ricky, you're connected to one of the teachers. Do you want to talk about him for a second?
Yeah. So as I mentioned before, when we first were introducing myself, I mentioned that Uvalde was one of the turning points for me that realized that gun violence is going to slowly kill each and every one of us, no matter who or where we are, who we voted for is going to come for you, no matter who you are. And I never ever thought that I'd be connected with these families. I just started my advocacy. That's when Beto O'Rourke was running for governor. And I continued talking about it. I continued speaking up. I continued making people feel uncomfortable on social media. I continued challenging people who are Republicans and saying, you know, how on earth are you going to sit here and defend these law enforcement officers when they stood out there for 77 minutes? Because I remember the night it happened, the day it happened, I remember exactly where I was. People on social media were saying, arm them now, meaning arm teachers now. We saw days later how many law enforcement officers were armed, how many law enforcement officers had protection, had shields, had the same type of weapon that the individual who committed this act had. But they were so afraid to go in and take him out because of the weapon that he had. These children, these teachers had pencils and desks. These officers had helmets, they had shields, they had guns. These teachers and students had to defend themselves with pencils. I want everyone to realize that. And if you have a Republican family member, if you have a Republican friend, or if you are a Republican tuning in, imagine if that was your child begging and screaming and crying for help over and over and over. And they were calling for help. The 911 calls, we heard the footage, we heard the audio from the survivors from those classrooms. And now Texas has a law where you can have phones in the classroom. I mean, it's like a death sentence. How on earth are you going to call for help if, God forbid, someone breaks into your school? It just makes No logical sense, but that's Texas for you. They try to create different problems without solving the root of the problem and touching on it. And when I was doing all of that advocacy, and I mentioned I was making people uncomfortable, I started getting noticed from the people in Uvalde. I never ever reached out to them. I didn't want to impose anything on them. I wanted them to just be with their emotions and just grieve and sit with whatever they wanted to do. But those people are the strongest people you will ever meet in your life because they turned their pain into action. They started an organization called Lives Robbed, and through all that pain that they got from the state of Texas, from the governor who said that their children's deaths could have been worse, their own community turned their back on them and they still show up. Those people are Arnie Reyes, the surviving teacher from one of the classrooms, who I had been a good, friend with him on social media, and I met him just this past year at the Capitol Advocacy Day. And meeting him was just so powerful because, I mean, the way he was targeted, the way he was shot, it's a miracle that he is here with us, and I'm glad that he is here with us. But every waking moment of his life is a flashback to that day. Because his arm was hit so bad that they basically had to reconstruct it. And he can't even sleep at night because of how uncomfortable it is. So when he finds a comfortable space, he just has to sit there and wait it out till the morning because he can't get comfortable anymore. And he said that he sleeps with the lights on still, just if he finds a comfortable spot. Because these individuals waited 77 minutes, and so many people love to tell me, oh, a good guy with a gun's gonna stop a bad guy with a gun. That is false. There were nearly, guess how many officers were there? Nearly 400 officers that day who waited 77 minutes, going back and forth, saying they didn't have a key, they didn't know who was in charge, the door was locked, the door was open, they heard the gunman recharge, and they did nothing. They let these children die. Blood is on their hands of every single one of them, and it breaks my heart and it enrages me so much that these people still have their jobs.
Absolutely. I think accountability plays a key role in this, and the lack of accountability and the systemic failures of society. Because, students are supposed to go to school to learn, not dodge bullets in their classroom. And this is an alarming statistic that is continuing going on and on and on. And oftentimes we hear about thoughts and prayers, but did they recognize what just happened in Minneapolis earlier this year, like back in August? The students literally just started back to school or were getting ready to start back to school, and they were attending mass. They were literally praying, and they were shot and killed while praying. And also earlier this year, also in Minnesota, Melissa and Mark Portman were gunned down in their home by a man who was pretending to be a police officer. And their dog, Gilbert, was also shot and killed, which was a golden retriever. I want to take a moment and recognize the work that Melissa did. And advocate for people that were different than herself and put their needs above hers. And even though she was no longer here, the work continues and it's never going to stop. And I want to take a moment and recognize that there was also on the same night as the Hortmans' murders, Minnesota State Senator John Hoffman and his wife Yvette were also shot and injured. Luckily, they survived, but I also want to recognize that because oftentimes they are left out of this conversation whenever thinking about the specific situation that happened in Minnesota. I also want to acknowledge that there was not any action on this almost immediately. Vance led police and the Minnesota State Police on a statewide manhunt. And they also went into Wisconsin and other states. And it wasn't until a bystander called police and notified them there's somebody in a bush. I sat and watched this video of her talking about this, and it haunts me still to this day. And I think about this. Melissa Hortman was a Democratic farm labor lawmaker. She had a long career in public service and was first elected to the Minnesota House in 2004. She served as speaker from 2019 until earlier in 2025 when she became speaker emerita after a divided House led to a power sharing arrangement. Throughout her career, she championed legislation on issues including education, transportation, and reproductive rights. Mark Hortman was a business professional. He held a bachelor's degree in physics from the University of North Carolina and an MBA from University of Minnesota. A native of North Carolina, he had lived in Minnesota for more than 30 years and was a supportive spouse to Melissa's political career. Vance Bolter was the suspect and was arrested and taken into custody after a two-day manhunt. He was charged with federal crimes and faced four state charges. The attack is believed to be politically motivated, and investigators found a list of other political figures as potential targets in his possession. I want to take a moment and recognize the need for justice and peace. And I want to say that my heart literally goes out to Colin and Sophie, which was their children. And they released a statement urging people to stand up for what you believe in, especially if that thing is justice and peace. And that is exactly what I am aiming to do with the Rise Above Justice movement. It's not just in the name, it's a mission, it's a passion. Because if I do not do it and my team, which Ricky, you're a part of the extended team, you already know that. I firmly believe that if we don't do this work, nobody's going to do it for us because they are not listening. The answer to everything is always thoughts and prayers, or so they say. But again, going back to the Annunciation school shooting, the Catholic school shooting in Minneapolis, I used to walk by that school every single day whenever I lived in Minneapolis from 2017 to 2018. I was up there for a year and a half. And I walked by that school, and every time I walked by, I was thinking, oh, children are playing, they're sitting in classrooms. Can you imagine walking by, seeing what happened now on that day? Because if I still lived up there, I probably would have walked right by there. I live literally right down the street from there. I walk by there every single day.
It's, I remember when you told me that. It's really wild how you are so connected to different types of tragedies. And when I heard about that, they were praying in pews, and there was a survivor who said that the one of the children who got hit as they got shot in the head, that they just wanted them to hold their hand. Just hold their hand is what they asked for. And when it happened, so many disgusting attacks came out from the far right saying, well, it was a tranny, it was a transgender person. And Nancy Mace being one of the worst persons in the world who said that. Children died. Children are dead. Children are forever scarred. There was an individual who was paralyzed and didn't know what to do. I mean, his teachers and his friends were scared for them, to the point where I think that they just were, picked him up and were just on top of him trying to save him and cover him from the bullets. And it was such a sad day. Many of y'all know I'm Catholic, and I think that Annunciation is such, unfortunately, an example of what religious people across the country, people who claim to be pro-life, need to realize, that you cannot be pro-life and be pro NRA, be pro gun like this. Children were dead. They were gunned down. We believe that we're supposed to have a natural death. That is not a natural way to die. You should not be shot to death. And Pope Leo talked about being pro-life yesterday in a great way. And I think that as Catholics, many of us need to reevaluate what our term pro-life really means and what our faith teaches us. And you also touched upon what happened in Minnesota, and I'm glad that you talked about Senator Hoffman and his family. When it happened, we obviously heard about Melissa, Mark, and Gilbert. But I was at a doctor's appointment and I got a notification from CBS News. And on the notification, it said that the wife of Minnesota Senator John Hoffman was shielding their daughter from bullets in the targeted shooting at their house. I believe her name is Hope. And just seeing their family picture and seeing that headline, I can't even imagine, what she was going through, what was going through their minds when that happened. And it's just so triggering to what these families and what these parents and teachers had to do for their students in their classroom to have to shield them. It was being reported that Irma Garcia, one of the teachers who passed away in Uvalde, was found shielding her children at the crime scene at Robb Elementary. So we have to continue the work for Melissa, Mark, and Gilbert. And we also have to remember and honor John, his wife, and their daughter, because they're survivors. And that's what, the Rise Above Justice movement, encapsulates. It talks about it's being a voice for survivors of violence. And I think that you're doing it very, very beautifully and perfectly. But when Melissa passed away, I was just so angry at how the world didn't make a peep, didn't say anything. But you have a podcaster who unfortunately was also killed by gun violence, and the world's martyring him, and the president is reporting on it. The president's making statements right away. He's lowering the flags. And for the president to say that he had no idea who Melissa was. And when it happened, I was with a fellowship with Giffords as a Courage Fellow, and we learned about what Melissa did and how she was a champion for gun violence prevention. And we've seen it in her speeches and her memorial videos. And it just sucks knowing that she fought her life and her career to end gun violence, and that's how she had to die. It gets me every single day.
It does me too, and I think about it literally every single day. And I also think about two people that I personally know. London Taylor was shot and killed. I went to middle, or I think it was either like later in middle school, but it was definitely high school before she moved away. And she was one of the most beautiful souls. Ricky, you absolutely would have loved her, and she would have loved you. People thought that she was bullying me in school because of how we were, but that's literally just how we were. And I was like, no, she's harmless, she's fine. She ended up moving away. And I remember going on her page because I got a message that something happened to London. And coincidentally, it was actually the other friend that I'll be talking about here in this second. My world is here up again. But part of this podcast is to give that authentic voice. I believe that humans are a part of that authentic voice. So if it happens, I don't edit it because I believe in the raw conversation, because these are conversations that we need to be having. But I got a message from my other friend, Taylor, letting me know that something happened to London and she's not sure what happened. I was wondering if I heard anything. And I said, no, what did you hear? And then Taylor's like, I think she got shot. And later, either later that night or later that week, there was an article that came out that talked about it. London was literally shot in her chest 3 times over making the joke about her roommate not paying rent. I think about this. I make jokes about not paying rent because the rent is too goddamn high. I make jokes about that. Some people cannot handle jokes. And then fast forward to last June. I saw a post that Taylor Thomas was also shot. It was in the ICU. That was the other friend I was talking about that I mentioned that messaged me and let me know about London. This was like a whole 360 moment for me because it's like everything, all those emotions and all those feelings came right back to me. But it also reminded me of why I need to continue doing this work. It reminded me of why I started 16 years ago advocating for our voices. Has that always been an easy journey? No. Did I ever imagine that a 3 a.m. conversation would turn into an international movement of people? No, I did not. But at the same time, I am so grateful that it has. I am so beyond grateful that it has because it's led me to connecting to people like you and my co-founders, Gwen and Mercedes and Amelia. It's led me to connecting with people that you would not just run into at a gas station. These are people that have been doing this work for literally decades, longer than I've been alive. And I've almost been alive for 3 decades. Shut up, Ricky. But
Girl.
because like you give me shit all the time about my age, and it's like I, you know what, age is nothing but a number. You know,
Exactly.
as long as there's consent involved. Wait, wait, nudge, nudge. Some people need to learn that. But with all that being said, you know, I do have an update about one of the survivors from the Annunciation shooting, and today is October 2nd. And there's an update from CBS News about Lydia Kaiser, which she is a survivor of the Annunciation school shooting in Minnesota that we were talking about just a little bit ago. She has returned to school after multiple surgeries. And I want to read this article for a second. There are more signs of hope following the deadly mass shooting at Annunciation Catholic Church in Southwest Minneapolis. Annunciation Catholic School student Lydia Kaiser, 12 years old, has returned to class for the first time since the August 27th school shooting, according to a GoFundMe page, which has raised more than $400,000 for her family. A shooter fired more than 100 rounds through the church's stained glass windows during a mass marking the start of the school year. Two students were killed, 10-year-old Harper Moiski, I really hope I pronounced that last name right, and an 8-year-old Fletcher Merkel, and 18 other students, including Lydia, were injured. Three parishioners in their 80s were also hurt. Lydia Kaiser was shot in the head while protecting a friend. She underwent multiple surgeries to remove bullet fragments from her brain. I, reading this article, it makes the work even more powerful to recognize survivors, to recognize those that are no longer with us because of senseless acts of violence like gun violence and domestic violence. And I think about these things, and I can't help but I just can't help but think about all that have happened since all of these senseless shootings. There's one that really hits me hard right here in the Kansas City metro area. And her name is Brazen Kane. Brazen Kane became the Kansas City's number 18th victim of intimate partner violence so far this year. And this article came out on 8/18 of 2025, and there's been countless of others since. I want to add that in there. And experts say cases are growing more violent, with survivors reporting an escalation of threats like use of guns and strangulation. Brazen Nicole Kane was 42 years old, was a boy mom, a single parent of five sons who constantly had them out in nature, playing with dogs, camping, fishing, and paddling. She was devoted to her boys, was pregnant with a sixth, and was a light to other mothers in her family. Kane's favorite color was purple. They attended her funeral at Trinity United Methodist Church in Kansas City. She was killed in her front yard on August 6th, struck first by a pickup and then shot 21 times. Her former boyfriend, Arel Dawkins, was charged with first-degree murder and armed criminal action in her death. Kane was pregnant with Dawkins' child, and he was also the father of her youngest 2-year-old. One of her or her former sister-in-law stated, and she's also an aunt of 3 of Kane's children, she was a light that just shined. Her smile just lit up the room. She was so kind, so patient. She was a boy mom. Again, Kane became the 18th victim of domestic violence-related homicides in Kansas City this year alone, a significant increase from last year's total of 12. And a Trin City officials warned as an alarming increase back in April of 2025. A Kansas City, Kansas homicide is also being blamed on domestic violence. Sean Harris, 38, was charged with capital murder in the killing of a Wyandotte County Sheriff's deputy who responded to a call from Harris's former girlfriend. Experts cite a host of reasons for the rise, including easy access to firearms, which increases the risk of homicide for women by 500%, stated by Lisa Fleming, who's the CEO of a nonprofit dedicated to fighting domestic violence here in the Kansas City area by the Rose Brooks Center. She also cited social isolation, a lack of social support, and a reduction of resources and safety networks, such as emergency shelters and safe and affordable housing. She stated that, or in the, also in this article, it did state that Dawkins, 36 years old, who lived in Blue Springs, Missouri, was reportedly angry that Kane had broken up with him on August 6th around 8 p.m. He struck her with his black Ford F-150 pickup, and then as she laid on the ground, got out of the truck, approached her, shot her, stopping only to reload his handgun, according to a Kansas City Police Department report. Dawkins fled in his truck, but called a friend and allegedly confessed that he killed Kane and was thinking of suicide, police reports. He eventually was picked up in Springfield, Missouri, and is being held at the Jackson County Detention Center. Kane also worked as an assistant teacher at the Academy of Integrated Arts, where the first day of school was that Thursday. Miss Brazen's absence was profoundly felt throughout our entire community. I can't even begin to imagine the deep sense of loss that her children and family feel each morning when they wake up. That is a part of the interview that is from Trisha DeGraff, who is the school's executive director. Parents told DeGraff that it was difficult to tell their children that the teacher they knew and loved, as Miss Brazen, was killed. As I stated, Brazen was a mother of 5 and was pregnant at the time that she was murdered with the same person who is the father of her youngest. Unfortunately, Brazen's Kane or Brazen's oh games. Brazen's case is far too common. And we know that one is too damn many. And Ricky, the work that you do deeply inspires so many around you. Watching your platform literally grow beyond an astronomical rate has been one of the most rewarding experiences that I have ever seen, and one of the quickest growing social media accounts literally ever. I remember whenever you posted and said, "Oh, I'm really close to 10,000." Now you are so incredibly close to reaching 60,000 followers on your Instagram at The Gay Liberal. For anybody who's listening, be sure to follow Ricky. But what inspired you to begin your platform? So obviously the work that you do, everything else, but what led you to create an Instagram? And when did you create it too?
First of all, thank you so much for the kind words. And I remember that before we touch upon that, I want to retract and go back to what you were talking about with Brazen Kane and what happened in Kansas City. It's so sad that, I'm glad that there's Well, actually, going back to enunciation, you had mentioned the surviving students going back to school. It's a miracle that they are able to, they're survived. But what people don't understand is that though that child is a surviving student of that shooting, they're going to carry that trauma with them for the rest of their lives. And they're going to be afraid to go to school. They're going to be afraid to do anything. They're going to be filled with PTSD for the rest of their lives. That never, ever leaves anyone. So I want everyone, to continue celebrating that success, but also remember and reflect the pain that this child has to carry for forever. And domestic violence and gun violence intersect together, as you talked about with Brazen. It's very, very sad to me that the leaders of this country have said that domestic violence isn't a problem, blaming the victims and blaming the survivors. And if you are a survivor or if you are a victim of domestic violence, I want you to know that you are never, ever alone. You have me and a coalition with Zach at the Rise Above Justice Movement. They're available quite literally 24/7. I think of them almost as a hotline for anyone who needs help and needs an outlet and a voice. So, though we have leaders who say domestic violence isn't a thing, ignore it. Don't pay attention. Continue showing up. Continue being a voice for yourself and for others. And I think that that's what my platform and what Zach's platform at Rise for Justice Movement continues to do. And I started my platform in 2024. Was my personal Instagram. I'd always been very, very political on Facebook and on Twitter, and never really much on Instagram or TikTok. All I would post on Instagram was my pictures with politicians, like with Beto. And I saw that there was an uptick in far right propaganda, far right rhetoric taking over social media. And I said, this is a problem. I said, I don't have a big account. I don't know if I'm going to get a big account, but I need to try and do something. I need to try and mobilize my people, mobilize my folks, my relations that I have. And so I just started picking up the phone and talking to the camera about what I was doing in the field, what I was talking to voters about, what I was calling voters about, how they were resonating with my message, how they were resonating with the different types of candidates, how they felt about the upcoming presidential election or the past presidential election with Biden and Harris, what their thoughts were when Joe Biden dropped out. And it's really simple, the work that I did in the field translated to digital and it reached people who had no idea about field work and what it was doing. And it gave people hope knowing that people are on the ground fighting. And I think that's what makes my account and my quote unquote niche so unique is I do a lot of on the ground work. And I just did it because I felt a need for it. Never ever expected that I'd grow to be to where I was at now. And it's led me to so many different types of people. It's really funny how social media works. I didn't realize my small videos were reaching these big accounts like yours and the people that I collaborate with now. But I still remember our very first interaction. You told me, you said, whenever you're posting anything about the election, you're posting anything about social justice, you collab me. And from there, we've just been collabing ever since. And I'm like, man, these people are probably sick of me. But I've been very grateful because I'm like a regular voice on your platform. And I'm so honored. And I wouldn't have been able to do it without you. And you and I have collaborated so closely on different types of issues when the government, when the president was giving his speech in Congress, that's when we hit 10,000. And then we were collaborating very closely when I was on the ground at the rally with Tim Walz, and we collaborated really closely when I was at the Arlington event with the redistricting here in Texas. And it's where I met so many different people who were in person, and they were like, "Oh, hey, do you know Zach?" And I'm like, "Hold on, you know Zach Mallory?" And they're like, "Yeah, we love him." And it's like, boy, this boy has been around. Everyone knows freaking Zach Mallory. And that should say something about you and the platform that you've built, the work that you do. You have given people a tremendous outlet and a voice. And you should be proud of that. I mean, I remember every milestone that I've seen you grow. You ha now have over 200,000 people on the Rise Above Justice movement on Instagram. That is insanely incredible. And now you've evolved to the podcast. You are doing the Lord's work. And I remember you said you're doing it full time now. And I think it also speaks to the full time is how some of the work that we do often goes overlooked by different types of organizations, funders, and the National Party and things like that. But it really also says that we don't really need them. We're still going to continue doing what we do. We're not going to let that intimidate it or stop us because we're going to save us. We are going to look out for each other. And I'm just eternally grateful. As you said, I'm almost hitting 60,000. I hit 50,000 not too long ago. And when it happened, I just was in awe knowing that halfway to 100,000 on Instagram is incredible. And it was truly just a transformation for my personal Instagram. You know, someone tried to insult me and they were like, oh, it's the gay liberal speaking again. And I was like, you know what, troll? I like that name. And that's how I evolved to the gay liberal. And like when I'm in public at different types of political events, people come up to me and they're like, Ricky, are you the gay liberal? And I was like, yes, I am. And they're just so sweet and so nice. And it makes me feel good knowing that people listen to what I have to say, that I'm not just speaking into an abyss. But it also speaks to the importance of content creation and social media and how we can use it to reach people who would otherwise not be politically engaged. So I'm just motivated by you, by the work of our people and our friends, our you know, partners and collaborators. And it motivates me to keep on going because we're in a crazy point in time where this administration is trying to silence people and we're not going to let that happen.
Absolutely, because silence is complicity and complicity means compliance, and I refuse to comply. And I say it because it's absolutely true. And it's not just in the work that I do with the Rights of Justice Movement, but also in like my everyday life. You know, my partner is transgender and we've been together for 7 years. And I think about that. And then also my mom being a survivor of domestic violence and a number of other plethora of things, and then now going through her cancer treatments is definitely something that has opened my eyes a lot more. And it teaches you to not take these connections and your life for granted, because in one very moment, it can be ended at a very higher rate by violence. And whenever you're marginalized, you know, Latino or LGBTQ or a transgender Black woman or a disabled person, your chances of being victimized and or murdered are at a very higher risk than those that are not. And, you know, talking about these very complex issues and, you know, again, focusing on the intersectionality of everything that we've discussed today, Ricky, I just have one final question for you. And the final question is, if you were to receive a message today asking or telling you, I'm a survivor, what can I do to begin my healing? And one thing that I would like to note is healing is different for every single person. But if there was a survivor to reach out to you, what would you tell them and why?
Yeah, I think that is such a good question. You know, I can speak from personal experience. You know, my platform that I've built often talks about survivors of gun violence and survivors of abuse through, you know, gun violence, that intersectionality. And I've received messages before from people who thank me for the work that I've done, who thank me for the work that I continue to do. And I had this one individual who told me that she was a survivor of gun violence. And they asked how I did the work that I do. And I said, well, I'm just being a voice for those that don't have one anymore. And I encouraged them to share their story publicly. I continue to encourage them to share their story with their family and their friends as a very good start. Because when we talk about these experiences, it allows you to confront what happened. And, you know, many therapists say that, you know, in order to heal, you have to realize and accept what happened. And I also encourage them and strenuously emphasize that their story holds so much power in the change that's needed in this country for violence, gun violence, domestic violence, because these stories is what's going to push and drive the needle forward to get accountability, to get justice, and just to be seen and validated. And I think one of the biggest things that I can highlight and talk about is the Epstein survivors. They're so determined in turning their pain into action. And they're not going to be intimidated. They're not going to be silenced. And they stood there in Washington, D.C. and said, you know, if our elected officials are going to be cowardly and withhold these documents and these files to protect these pedophiles, we're going to compile our own list and we're going to share it with the world so people can see what happened. And I think that they're just a great example of how your story can reach across the aisle, knowing that there's some Republicans, granted, I think it's only like four or five, who signed on, but they were still able to reach those individuals. And some of those Republicans are far right Republicans. So just always encouraging survivors to use their voice, share their story, because that right there holds so much value. And if we just started believing survivors, we'd be living in peace and harmony.
Exactly. And, you know, ultimately, I speak from a survivor standpoint. And I have to agree with everything that you just said. And, you know, with that, I think just continuing to uplift survivor voices and continue uplifting, just uplifting survivors and just start by believing and hearing their stories, hearing their experiences. All it takes is one person to be the voice, to be the change. And it is an absolute honor to be in this movement with you, and you have opened my eyes so much. You have inspired me. You continue to inspire me each and every single day. And you are literally one of my absolute favorite people. And I hope you realize that. You know, I love you beyond belief. You know that.
And I love you. Thank
And we will continue. You know, this is not the last time we'll be on this podcast. You know, we don't need to talk about that right now because we have some ideas coming up. But you will be a frequent on this podcast too, and I already know that. Because we have a lot more to talk about, you know, but we have an hour to talk today, but there's so much more to talk about because this topic you can't just talk about in 1 hour. This doesn't even scrape the surface
Right.
on the amount of gun violence and just violence that run rampant through the communities for decades and decades and decades and centuries and centuries and centuries. This isn't something that's brand new. But we know that we demand more than thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers is not going to do it. What we'll do it as policy and action, and the people saying enough is enough. Hold your elected officials accountable because lives are literally in their hands, and their inaction continues to literally kill our brothers and sisters and our non-binary and our intersex family members and our community members. Ricky, thank you so much for coming on the Rise for Justice Movement podcast. Is there anything else that you would like to share today?
Just thanking you again for inviting me on. I'm super excited about the work that we're going to continue to do. I'm excited to see how you continue to grow. I'm super grateful to you and every single person at the Rise Above Justice Movement who hears me yap year day in day out. And you're going to continue to hear me yap as long as I'm alive. But thank you again for being a voice for survivors. And if you are a survivor listening in, I just want to reiterate that you are never ever alone, and that you have friends here with Zachary and myself.
Do you want to say for the people who should absolutely follow you on social media, do you want to say something that they may actually recognize and you know exactly what I'm talking about? Do you want to
Stop
say
doing.
it?
You're going to want to say that, hear this. I'm going to come back on this podcast again and again.
All right, my friend. Thank you so much. I will talk to you very soon.
Perfect.